that's why I use it. Yeah, and because I've done Zoom before, and I got to be honest, it didn't sound all that great. And maybe it's on my end. Maybe I'm not doing the right thing tweaking it. But it was okay. But I didn't like it too much. So
no, they compress the audio a lot. So yeah, probably you're just hearing that it's kind of lower quality. You
That's
want to
exactly.
be able to do all your compression, I think, once it's already in GarageBand or Adobe or whatever you're.
Well, what's funny is that I don't know, what do you use for your podcast? Are you just do Zoom or do you do GarageBand?
I use GarageBand for like the editing and things. And so if I was recording with Alex, we would just sit at a computer and record directly into GarageBand.
Nice.
But if I'm recording with a guest and we can't actually meet up with them in person, then we do Zoom.
Yeah.
And we would export that file into GarageBand. But exactly like what you said, the quality is always lower when you do that.
Yeah, but you know, GarageBand is great though. I mean, I wish I use Windows, so I don't have access to it. But every time somebody showed me that, that's like the way to go. If you have an Apple, Jesus, GarageBand's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. I mean, like if you really, really want to do it properly, you'd probably use Logic or something.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to fork out for that stuff. And like for just a podcast, you can do plenty good work with just GarageBand.
Yeah, and it's funny because when I got into podcasting, I didn't even consider how simple it really was to get started. I mean, nowadays, you know, they have Spotify put out the Anchor podcast hosting thing, which is like the easiest podcast hosting deal in the world. It's so simple. I tried it and it's awesome. But like everything is so much easier than maybe what it once was a few years ago, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So, but how'd you get into your own podcast? Like what made you want to do it?
It's a bit of a story, but here's what happened. Basically, when I did my master's degree, I was studying nutrition and dietetics. Mm-hmm. And there was this thing that we did really frequently through uni itself. And then on all my placements, you had to do it as well, where you would present a case study.
Okay.
And the structure, they called it reflective practice, but the structure was basically you'd walk into the department or, you know, your peers at uni and you'd say like, I saw this patient. These are the problems they presented with. This is what we know about the problems. This is the intervention that I designed for them and why. Here were the results.
Okay.
Here's what I would do better next time. And here are the things that we kind of need to find out to treat these people better. So it was this very sort of meticulous process of assessing how you have gone about your own practice with the aim being to improve it. And then obviously the people would ask you questions. And so everything you had to do had to be justifiable, but it also served to help you put your heads together and get better at your job over time.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it and I was like, it's really bizarre that in fitness, nobody is doing that. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the reasons why people end up with these really dogmatic practices that aren't evidence-based or who end up just falling for bullshit is because they don't go through that reflective practice process. And
awesome.
So I thought it was really smart of an idea to do. And so I spoke to my friend Alex and we were both powerlifting coaches. And I said, hey, you know, I'd love to basically do exactly that and just talk about our clients and we can record it. I'll transcribe it because I knew if I sent him a questionnaire, he wouldn't want to fill it in.
Yeah.
So I said, let's record it and I'll transcribe it. And I think it's going to be a really useful learning resource for people to look at.
Yeah.
And Alex kind of said, look, like, I think it's a really good idea, but it also sounds really boring. And why don't we just do a podcast?
Sure.
And I sort of went, you know, like, okay, we'll do it just for fun and see how it goes. So we got my iPhone and we just recorded and a voice memo. We literally did a voice memo for 30 minutes. Pretty much
that's
off
awesome.
The cuff, just mistakes make at competitions and just uploaded it and said like, well, let's see what people think.
Sure.
And it nearly immediately was really well received. Like the audio awesome. Itself sucked. The presentation sucked, but the information and the way in which we spoke was really good. And so we kind of just from there went, well, people like it. We had one person go on the internet and roast us, but he was just
hey man, when you get your first hater, like that's a good thing. So if you get somebody not liking your shit and they talk shit about you, it's almost like a badge of honor.
Well, yeah, the way I see it is like if 95% of people like you, Like, by the time you've gotten five haters, that means 100 people are listening, you know? So I was like, whatever.
That's a good, that's true.
So anyway, we basically just went from there because people liked it, and it became a very sort of self-reinforcing thing because it's very good fun. Yeah. And it is still sort of meeting that reflective practice thing that I had thought of for me to sort of plan a podcast and say, what do I want to find out? What's the story that I need to tell here, et cetera.
Mm.
And, you know, when people sort of come to know you and come to value you on the basis of that, so it's a community contribution that is enjoyable to you, just becomes like very good fun to keep going. And so we were very, very consistent for 2 or 3 years. And then we kind of fell by the wayside last year because of, you know, COVID circumstances and things like that.
Sure.
But it's probably something I'd explore doing again in the future. It was a really, really good time.
That's awesome. Are you guys still in lockdown right now where you're at?
Yeah. Yeah. Alex and I are both in Sydney.
Oh yeah. Okay.
And one of the difficulties for doing anything work-wise really is that we have a 5 kilometer travel restriction on us right now.
Oh my
so
God,
Alex lives about 12 Ks away from me, for instance, I think.
Yeah.
So we're in Sydney. It's pretty locked down, but I'm lucky enough where I am that, you know, I've got lots of nice things within 5 Ks of my house, just not many mates.
Which, well, that's good. But yeah, man, I feel for you. I truly do. I talked to somebody else from Sydney and yeah, they said the same thing. So Jesus, man.
Was that Angus?
That was Angus. That's yep. Yeah, you got it.
He lives about 3 Ks from me.
What? Really? That's so cool, man. Oh my God. Yeah, I spoke to Angus. Wonderful guy. I absolutely love his material. So it's pretty cool. So and you know what's funny? What I'm coming to find out just from like coming from the States and everything, you guys have this amazing culture. I don't know if it's in Sydney, but I talked to some people from Adelaide and there's this awesome culture of like powerlifters and people developing these very unique approaches to coaching. Is that what's kind of happening or is that kind of old news now?
No, I think that's true. I think like the fitness industry is definitely a bit of a sort of like two-speed industry in Australia though, because
definitely.
All the negative stereotypes that you would think of the fitness industry absolutely exist. And then there's also this kind of layer above or beside it of extremely professional people who are very well learned.
Yeah.
And I think powerlifting for one reason or another has attracted a lot of people who are quite highly educated or who think quite deeply about training to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't really put my finger on why, but there's been a bit of a cultural change in powerlifting as it's become sort of more and more accessible over the last 8 years to a decade. And so all those people that you're talking about have really filtered in and they're coming in with experience in exercise physiology or in S&C coaching or whatever it happens to be, where they're sort of like powerlifting itself is a very, very simple pursuit,
mm-hmm.
but they're starting to layer in some of those more complicated considerations and coaching more like holistically, as much as I hate that word. And so you're getting a lot of sort of very individual takes on a coaching model
sure.
for something that can be, I mean, powerlifting mastery can be achieved a really large number of ways. And so because of that, I guess it's also open to a huge degree of individuality in the way in which people choose to coach. It's a value system and a knowledge-based thing, you know?
Yeah, and to your point, you know, you mentioned that a lot more people are getting into it. It's sort of like what happened to CrossFit, at least from what I see. You know, CrossFit started off as that kind of like that special club kind of thing, like a cult almost, and then all of a sudden you had the CrossFit Open and then everybody was freaking doing it, going into it, trying to compete, beat their times and shit. So it grew so much beyond just this elite like fitness structure. And man, it seems as though powerlifting is becoming the same way. I mean, you freaking got powerlifters becoming boxers and shit. You know, it's like it's reaching, it's going everywhere now. Just the sport of powerlifting, man, freaking nuts.
Well, I think it's actually a second order effect of that CrossFit thing. Cause prior to me doing powerlifting, I did weightlifting and we were talking about that at weightlifting training, that the popularity had begun to explode because everybody had to learn clean and jerk and snatch for CrossFit.
Yeah.
And I think powerlifting sort of was similar in that people were having to do more strength training movements. And the good thing about powerlifting is that really, provided that you have a barbell and a rack, you can squat, bench, and deadlift, right? And so,
yeah.
And so when people started saying, well, I like this sort of, you know, performance objective oriented training, and CrossFit had sort of opened people's eyes to the idea that you could have competitive fitness pursuits, powerlifting was probably just like the natural next thing for people to begin to explore. Yeah. And, you know, particularly for all the things that make it a particularly enjoyable and empowering sport for people to do. And so I think it is actually a continuation of that exact same trend that happened with CrossFit.
Yeah. And again, it's, I think it's really cool. I think it's a great thing. It's opening up new avenues for people trying to get into fitness. So it's definitely something I see. But you said you started off with weightlifting and you got into powerlifting. What made you want to get into powerlifting as opposed to continuing with weightlifting?
I actually started prior to that. So powerlifting was kind of like, I guess, the last stop on a journey of fitness thing. So I actually began lifting weights. I began lifting weights with the intention to get as good as I could at rugby.
Okay.
And I really enjoyed it after not very long, for all of the very stereotypical reasons. I saw myself getting bigger and stronger week by week. Sure. I saw that very explicit connection between effort that I put in and increasing mastery at a task, things that are very self-reinforcing. And because I was a young teenager at the time as well, I liked the feeling of becoming stronger and more physically competent than my peers. And I think that was doubly important to me because I was
way a fat kid as well. Yeah.
So, you know, I saw all that and I saw myself getting better at rugby, but it became this sort of very addictive thing. And I trained with a bunch of my best mates, you know, in their garages and things, always just for fun.
Yeah.
And eventually, you know, as I was leaving school, I had this epiphany that as much as I liked rugby, I didn't want to pursue it really, really seriously. And I was a very good player in high school, but I realized that professional rugby probably wasn't for me. Like, I probably wasn't that good, but I also just didn't have it in my heart to try for it. And so as my engagement with rugby became less serious, my engagement with training, which I just loved for itself, became more serious.
Yeah.
And one of the things that sort of grew from that was deciding that I wanted to give weightlifting a go, because I thought strength sports were really cool. And I thought weightlifting was great because weightlifting has this blend of strength and athleticism to it. Have you done weightlifting?
Now, when you say weightlifting, are you talking about like Olympic weightlifting, right? With the
snatch and clean and jerk.
Okay, because of course my brain was like, well, yeah, man, I've done curls and I've been, that was right immediately where my brain went. Because it's funny, I learned that recently. People have been telling me weightlifting, and my dumbass thought it was just like regular shit that I do in the gym. And then somebody had to tell me, like, no, it's Olympic weightlifting. It's way different. I'm like, oh, I gotcha. So now, yeah, so I get it now. It took me a while though. I don't do it. No, I'm definitely not good at those movements.
So to bring the audience up to speed.
Yeah.
I was lifting weights all through high school.
Okay.
I wasn't doing weightlifting, the sport that you see on the TV at the Olympics, but I chose to do it. The reason I ask is because it's entirely unlike powerlifting because it is so dynamic. And so if you do something like say a snatch,
okay,
there's a period of very high exertion, but everything moves quite quickly. And there's a moment where you sort of catch a snatch or you receive a snatch. And if you have done it right, then you catch it in this very balanced position and it feels effortful but stable. And so you have this immediate kick in of a sense of achievement and knowledge of success that's like quite intoxicating. And so I thought that was really cool and I wanted to pursue it. And so I did. I trained for weightlifting for quite a while, that's not true, about like probably 9 months to a year.
Sure.
But the thing that stopped me was that I was still playing rugby casually. And somewhere along the ways, I had a couple of quite bad meniscal tears one of my knees.
Yeah.
And that was actually due to a bit of a structural abnormality that I had in my knees. That's a long story, but point is, I needed to have a meniscectomy, and that meant that I couldn't train properly for about 8 or 10 weeks. But after that point, deep squatting also really, really hurt.
Yeah.
And even playing rugby, I was able to return to playing, but I would have 2 or 3 days after where I couldn't walk upstairs and my knees would be really swollen. And it was kind of shitty. So I ended up parking weightlifting, and eventually I had to have the same operation on my other knee because I'd probably pursued rugby too aggressively to sort of fill the void.
It's almost like rugby's rough or something. Yeah.
Yeah, weird.
Somewhat weird.
Point is, I ended up having both of these surgeries, and there's been no lasting issues really. Like, I probably move a bit wonkily, but my knees are fine now. But in that period where I couldn't do weightlifting, and I retired completely from rugby because I was starting to realize I was having less fun than pain doing it.
Sure.
I had this sort of big void where I was like, I still love training, but I now have no purpose in doing it. I don't have weightlifting. I don't have rugby. And I was training kind of for aesthetics, but it actually just made me really discontent because I didn't actually get any intrinsic joy in looking in the mirror and feeling more symmetrical or anything. And
yeah.
And like, I think it just made me appraise myself in a really unhealthy way. And I kind of went, well, you know, I still think strength sports are cool. I still squat, bench, and deadlift. And powerlifting as a sport seems kind of fun. At the time, the culture of powerlifting was all very hardcore, beef at eat pizza and stuff.
Yeah.
But I was like, whatever, like it's still squat, bench, and deadlift. I'll just sign up for a competition and do it.
Yeah.
And so I signed up for one with about 2 weeks notice. And I just took my weightlifting onesie and showed up with my lifting gear.
That's not awesome. Really
knowing the rules.
Yeah.
And the guy who ran the competitions was a lovely dude. And he basically told me the rules and where I had to be and when. And I had a really good time. And I ended up actually winning my weight class pretty much because no one else had signed up. But
still,
that gave me this really bizarre reinforcement as well, where I was like, suddenly my training had purpose again. I'd felt a hint of success, and what I was doing in the gym aligned much better with my values. That sort of pride in doing work and achieving something and seeing my performance improve and stuff. And so again, I got back on that cycle of reinforcement. And so my engagement with powerlifting basically grew from there. And that's more or less the story. I mean, that was 8 years ago, but that's the start, and it's more or less been what's kept me in it since.
Yeah. And it brings up the question too. That's probably what people need to do, especially if they are really trying to achieve long-term progress in fitness, is change the focus and change the passion, like as they go through. Because eventually, I guess, like exactly what happened to you, certain things wane. Like, you start to not care about how you look. You know, you don't get the intrinsic joy from looking a certain way. It's like you constantly need to change the reasons. And like what you said, lining up your values or making sure what you're doing lines up with your values properly. So, it's interesting.
Quick caveat, if I were to look better, I would probably have gotten more fulfillment from training for it.
You've been like, oh, it's great. We keep going. Yeah. But no, absolutely. That's cool. It's because I find it fascinating that, we preach, or at least people on Instagram always preach for the looking better, you know, get six packs or whatever. And all the Instagram celebrities are doing the same thing. And it's this the same tired approach to fitness marketing. But if you want something that freaking works, it's, wouldn't you think that, like, I guess performance-based training is really the missing ingredient to getting anywhere with your body?
Yeah, and it's funny that you say that, because ironically, a few years into really focusing on powerlifting was probably when my physique was at its absolute best.
Yeah.
And, you know,
there you go.
Within that, I was having to stay within a weight class and things. But yeah, I started gaining muscle because I could. I started training harder because I was motivated to, and I was motivated by performance, which meant that I put more weight on the bar and push myself more. And I think losing a little bit of the neuroticism, like if you're always focused on looking your best, it's actually very hard to linearly improve, because when you start to gain muscle, if you have any loss of leanness, you start feeling like your physique has gone backwards, but it's a necessary part of progression to move forwards. Whereas if you're a powerlifting athlete and you say, like, I can be as heavy as whatever it is, you know, 86 or 88 kilos in pursuit of my improvement within this weight class, I'm currently 83. So I better try and get as strong as I can on the way up to 88 kilos. You've actually set yourself up for a very successful gain of muscle.
Sure.
And when you rinse and repeat that cycle, and you end up staying within a weight bracket, but sort of going up and down over time, suddenly your physique greatly improves. One sec while I sneeze. Ooh, sorry, I just muted myself.
Oh, no, you're okay. You cut out. I'm like, oh, he's gone. Yeah, it's all good. No worries, man.
No, it's all good. I was packing a huge sneeze. That's why I spoke so quickly for those few sentences.
That happened to me the other day, absolutely, man. Absolutely. I feel that. Yeah, shoot. I had to like turn away and I disappeared for a second. It's all good. No worries. But yeah, to your point, it's funny how I'd imagine you grow pretty quick, and you're right. You tend to recognize the cycles your body has to go through to really kind of achieve what you want to look like. Whereas if we're so focused on the aesthetics and everything, we notice every little thing that may not be good. And yeah, so just confirming, like, that's exactly what I see, you know? So,
yeah. And I think the other thing is that most people pursue powerlifting training with a bit of a phasic structure.
Yeah.
So you have some periods that are very dedicated to trying to put on muscle mass, and some periods that are very dedicated to trying to improve technical mastery and really improve strength with less of a concern for gaining size or improving body composition.
Sure.
And I also think that being able to, like, some people don't train like that. They have a much more concurrent model. But that ability to sort of flip-flop in your goals a little bit also just keeps your mindset a little bit healthier, because it does give you a time to really pursue those things. But then you balance it out by saying, okay, like, I've done that, now I need to put it to use.
Yeah.
And, you know, good powerlifting training over time should be very effective hypertrophy training. It's not trading in absolutely every single thing to maximize hypertrophy, but it should be really good. And the only really big difference is that if you were training purely for aesthetics, you would care a lot more about, you know, elements of balance in your physique, whereas in powerlifting, you're trying to get as big as you can in the muscles that help you support the lifts. And ultimately, unless you really, really care about aesthetics to the nth degree, that ends up meaning that you get pretty big across your whole body, more or less. So it's good training.
It's almost like you could build that foundation through powerlifting, you know, just pack on the muscle. And then when you're sitting there and you really want to, like, maybe prepare for like a show or something, then you can go into the nitty gritty of carving out your muscles and making things more proportional. So it's almost like a necessary step if you really want to succeed in other sports that have to do more with aesthetics, you know? So,
well, the reverse is also true, and possibly even truer, in that people who come into powerlifting with a really big base of muscle do very well in powerlifting after not too long, because they have all the equipment to lift heavy weights. And the lesson of that for a lot of powerlifters is probably that spending a decent amount of your time just trying to get really jacked whilst simultaneously obviously practicing the lifts and lifting kind of heavy is probably good practice. And so it kind of runs both ways, you know. You should be pursuing getting stronger, but you should be pursuing getting stronger in quite a lot of things and not investing all of your time in maximum specificity all of the time.
Yeah. Do you ever want to do a show? Or are you kind of, you think you'll ever do one? I don't blame you. No, I don't blame you, man. It's such a weird thing. It really is. It's such an odd group of people. Different.
You know, I have this thing. One of the reasons why I really like fitness and training is this idea that you get to experience a whole bunch of things about your body that you otherwise wouldn't. Yeah. Like you kind of have this weird vehicle through which you experience the world, which is your body and your mind.
Yeah.
And when you exercise, you're exposed to all this different stuff you otherwise wouldn't be. You run really fast. You know, you jump off something high, you lift something heavy, you do a really hard long run, like you feel and experience all these cool things you wouldn't. And so for just that reason, the idea of trying to get really, really lean kind of appeals to me. But then when I think about everything else that goes along with bodybuilding and the ramifications for the rest of my life, like as in my life outside of the gym.
Yeah.
And like even just how much achievement I would feel to be told that my physique is better than somebody else's. I think about all those things and I go, honestly, I don't care. So I could see myself one day saying, I'm going to get shredded pretty much just to get shredded.
Yeah.
But I would probably stop at like the 6 or 8 weeks short of getting on stage point, because I'd have felt like I'd gotten enough to get the sensory experience that I care about but didn't have to commit to all the things that gave me no joy.
I like that though. Nobody's ever said that, and that's interesting. Because yeah, maybe you get to a point where you're like, you realize it didn't mean as much to you as you thought it would. You know, it's almost like it's a little too internal, and it boxes you off to the rest of the world. Like you have to really just sequester yourself from like regular life, you know, and even more so, I guess, than powerlifting, because everybody who does the whole bodybuilding show prep, I mean, it is freaking nuts. I did a couple, and it's like you have to not do anything outside of your diet if you're serious, you know. So,
and I'm actually curious to hear how you felt. I imagine when you are doing it, it is deeply unpleasant, and then in hindsight, you feel a great sense of pride, and on reflection, you're probably like, wow, there's all these things I learned from that experience. Is that the case?
That is exactly the case, man. And it's funny because, you know, it's not even the only time it really felt fulfilling is when you are up there on stage and it's like entirely they're staring at you. You know, you got hundreds of people just watching you, and it's weird. It's such a bizarre sensation. You're literally on your own. It's crazy. But yeah, it's almost funny that, yeah, you're right. I look back, it's a sense of pride. It was a bucket list thing. But all of that prep for 15 seconds. And it's like, was it worth it? You know? So yeah, it really confirms what you're saying. You would feel the same way. It's almost not worth it. It's almost like so little that you're working for. It's just pointless in the end, you know?
If it came from a deep value in your heart, then I would completely respect it. But when I think about even like, you know, endurance sports where you're doing something really, really hard for a number of hours, say, like at the time, a lot of unpleasant physical feelings, but you're actively engaged in the competitive process the whole time.
Yeah.
And it is still a few hours is short in the scheme of things. Obviously, you have weeks of hard training and things prior to it, but like whatever. In the process of competition, like you are competing the whole time that you feel bad.
Sure.
Whereas I think bodybuilding is kind of unique in that what you said is true. The competition on the stage doesn't seem at all related to the unpleasant sensory experiences that you go through on the way.
Exactly.
And so it's kind of bizarre. It just, I don't know. It's never quite gelled with me. Full respect to people who want to do it, but for me, it's unique and different in a way that doesn't quite attract me.
Yeah, it's going through that sacrifice and that discomfort to look your best, and it's such an inward focused thing. And you know, naturally, I did it just because it was a good experience. You know, you want to put yourself out there and do something different. You know, that was it. But yeah, it's compared to what you go through in the powerlifting sport, it is completely different mindset of focus. So yeah, I get where you're coming from. It really is something that wouldn't fulfill you at all in the end. It really wouldn't. So yeah, and you already know that. But
yeah, I was gonna say I feel some vindication now.
Yeah, you know,
things may change. I've done a lot of things in the past that I said I would never do.
Yeah.
So you talk to me in 15 years, but right now I don't see myself being.
I'll call you in 15 years, and you're gonna have done one. I'll be like, I told you want to do one. Yeah. No.
Yeah, it just took me a while to realize. Maybe.
That's right. You listened to me in the end. Yeah, no, that's awesome. I also saw your video, just as a side note, I saw your video about the Olympics. Just want to, you know, say that was really clever. It gave me a chuckle. I laughed. Slalom canoeing a while
thank
back.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, not like that matters, but I thought it was funny because I was sitting there feeling what you were saying, especially about this year's Olympics. They added like 5-6 new sports, and it was just like they puked a bunch of new sports on the Olympics. You're like, what's happening? So yeah, it was the darndest thing. I was like, oh, skateboarding's in there now. So
yeah. Skateboarding was an interesting one because it was fun. I was watching the women's park skateboarding or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And the winner was like 13 years old, and she was incredible.
Yes.
But
yeah,
there was someone right. Like 30. competing against her. And I was like, far out. Imagine you've trained your whole life for the Olympics. You're 30 something years old. And there's this chick who's like, you know, had to take school off to come and compete, who just shattered in as well. This 13-year-old was like, sorry if I'm not allowed to swear.
Oh,
this
no, you can swear. You're good. No, you're good.
She killed it. And I was like, oh my goodness. Like, you know, there's very few other sports where that happens, but she was just out and out the best. And you've just got to eat that as an adult.
She was awesome. But yeah, it was funny because you're right. It was USA's, our girl. She was like triple the age or something. Like, so she was like 32 or something. And I'm like, who is this girl? Like, I've never seen this girl in my life. And she's like double the age of a lot of these competitors. It was so funny, man. I totally feel that because it was. And then we had she didn't do well though. I didn't think she placed. So yeah, you guys did well in surfing though, right?
I can't recall who won gold.
Yeah,
but I think we would have placed probably quite well. I mean, in both sexes, we have a number of very good surfers.
Yeah, you know, for sure. Yeah, you can definitely claim superiority in that sport for sure. That's hands down. That's awesome.
I think at the moment the Brazilians have both the men's and
Angus told me that. Yeah, Angus was telling me that. He said the same exact thing. He said the Brazilians came up from behind.
Yeah. Don't quote me on that because I don't actually follow competitive surfing as closely, but I'm pretty sure that both men's and women's world champ are Brazilian right now. And there is a big surfing culture in Brazil and in Brazilian expats as well. So
yeah,
wouldn't surprise me.
No, for sure, man. No, it's definitely, it was just funny because you watch it and you're like, damn, there's a lot of new sports on this one. I've never seen these things before. So, yeah.
You know, I think it's a very sort of 2020 or 2021 for this Olympics thing. But one of the joys of the Olympics for me normally is watching the sports that I otherwise wouldn't care about.
Yes.
Like we had this Australian guy, Steve Hooker, who won the pole vault, I think when I was in high school. And I don't know if we'd ever won pole vault before. I'm not sure. But everyone was so excited to watch Steve Hooker win the pole vault.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't catch me watching pole vault for the other, like, you know, 3 years, 364 days and 23 hours and 30 minutes.
You mean you're not an Olympic cycle? You don't watch that every day? What you talk about? You're not turning on the pole vault.
For those 30 minutes, I was hype on pole vault.
Yeah.
And I think, like, because of the whole COVID situation, my emotional energy for caring about sports outside of, like, the big traditional ones just disappeared.
Yeah.
And so, sadly, I got a lot less joy out of watching the Olympics this time around than I normally would.
I'm sure a lot. Which is a shame. Did. Yeah. Honestly, it was the biggest thing, too. I'm sure you saw it, too, was just not seeing anybody in the stands. I just like, there was, like, no energy. You know, they were trying to come up with ways to keep it the same. But yeah, man, I feel you. It was kind of like, what's the point? You lost a lot of interest you used to have back when it was, you know, a huge thing. So,
yeah. There was a girl I went to uni with. Her name's Liz Clay. And she represented Australia in, I believe, the 400 hurdles. It might not be 400. I'm not 100%, but she's a hurdler. And she, when we were at uni, she was training and she was sort of at that, like, Commonwealth Games qualifying level, like, really, really good athlete.
Yeah.
And she had had a number of injuries. I remember every 6 months or so, she'd show up at uni in crutches or in a moon boot or something. But she worked so, so hard. And I think she narrowly missed out on qualifying for the prior Olympics. And she got into these ones.
Yeah.
And I saw her on Facebook and I was so happy for her. And I think she was like 0.01 of a second or something short of making the finals.
Oh,
I'm not 100%. But she did really well. But I was thinking as I sort of kept an eye on her results, like, wow, you know, I know how much hardship, at least in some loose sense, that this girl's gone through to make the Olympics. It's been like a lifelong pursuit. And then to think that she makes her Olympic debut at like 25, 26 years old, and there's no one in the stands. And it's been delayed by a year and all this stuff. I would just think, like, you know, she's still probably felt fantastic about it, but there's an element of tragedy that it's not everything that it could have been after all of that work, you know?
Yeah. And it almost cheapens the work you put into it all this time, you know?
Well, I very much hope not, but yeah. I can't help but imagine that it would have been less exciting than it could have been.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so true. I really did. I felt for those, for all the athletes and everything.